I've often wondered if a Kennedy or a Rockefeller really knows what it is to face the temptation that a father with starving babies and starving children in his home faces when he's standing on a street corner and a bread truck parks right alongside of him and leaves the back door open. You wonder what a Kennedy or a Rockefeller would do. Why, easy. They could buy the whole damn truck. What if those pure people had a family home starving? Nobody was on the street, and the bread truck was parked there. That would prove them. That'll bring out what's in you. And I ain't going to judge whether you take the bread or not. That's why I let people work it out with God themselves. The law says it's stealing. Back to Deuteronomy. He humbled thee, God did. He humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger, that he might make thee know. It's a teaching process. Now, I'm going to pray. Let me leave that for a minute. Thou shalt also consider, let me finish it, in thine heart that as a man chasteneth his son, and the word means traineth, so the Lord thy God traineth thee. I want to graduate. I've had it with this training bit. And I said earlier, I'm going to pray, and this is what I'm going to pray about. I'm going to pray that God inspires Ron to write a song entitled Rephidim. They'll be able to do that with a rock beat based on what I'm about to teach. Now, I've been here before, but I want to teach it against the backdrop of what I've been reading and what I've been preaching the last few weeks. God answered the question of Abram. You can go to Exodus 17 and wait for me. Page 86, if you've got a Bible like mine. God answered a question by Abram. Let me mix the stew again. When God promised Canaan to Abram, said, wherever you walk, it'll be yours, and as far as you can see, it'll be yours, and your children forever. Abram asked a question. Well, how will I know? God said, I'll answer it. And the I that was Abraham would extend to Abraham through his children. And when God got done working out the answer, his children ought to know. Because what he said he would do as a proof that the land he promised was Abraham's children was impossible to affect by the laws of probability. He said, this is the way you'll know. Your children will go to a land that they're strangers in, that they don't live in. Now, they will become slaves in that land, and in the fourth generation, and say third, and say fifth, in the fourth generation, they will come out of that land richer than when they went in, and I will bring them back to this place. Now, as I've said when I've taught on this, that's a mighty tall order. And I'm not interested in just telling a Bible story. I want you to understand the probabilities. You try to do it with somebody. Okay. I'm going to give these four city blocks where you live to you. Well, how will I know? Well, I'll give you an experiential unraveling that'll take four generations to show my control. I mean, if I can do this, I can sure control the affairs sufficient to give your children the land. That's the point. Number one, you're too old to have kids, but you're going to have them anyway. Number two, those kids are going to go to a land they're a stranger in, become slaves, and in the fourth generation, precisely and exactly, I will bring them out richer than when they went in, bring them right back to these four blocks. You want to try that? I believe if I could make that statement and accomplish it, they'd elect me mayor or governor or president or world ruler. If you can do it, any one of you that can do that, you got my vote. What happened? God caused a famine to come in the days of Jacob. 70 descendants of Abram went down to Egypt, ruled for a while, then became slaves. In exactly the fourth generation, God brought them out. And what a going out it was. And the Egyptians were so glad to get rid of them, they loaned them their gold and their silver until they were weighted down, thus fulfilling that part of the promise, they'd come out richer than when they went in. Now, if I were one of those 3.4 or 3.5 or 3.6, various estimates, million people, I would start believing when the plagues came on Egypt and the miracles of deliverance occurred, all making these slave master Egyptians loan me their gold and silver. And as I set out marching across that desert, I'd be prone to believe and have confidence. By cracky, I went there, my fathers did, as God said. We were strangers, as God said. We became slaves, as God said. It's the fourth generation, as God said. I'm coming out, weighted down with gold and silver, loaned to me by the Egyptians. Richer than when my fathers came, as God said. What's the expectancy that I can go with that same God in control back to the place that God said we'd go back to? Pretty high, wouldn't you say? Hell. We're stopped by the Red Sea. I'll be a four-legged blackbird. No bridge, no boat. And charging up behind me, the army of Egypt. Wonder if God can handle this one. Now, what I ought to say is, hell yes. In fact, what I ought to do is get up on a big old sand dune and just flip the good old American eagle at them Egyptians. They ain't got a prayer. And just start walking toward the Red Sea expecting to walk on water. But being in the crowd, I didn't. I got scared. God didn't ask me to do a thing. He's still doing it all. He said through Moses, "Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord." Stretched his rod over the Red Sea. Water rolled up just like Cecil B. DeMille said it did. I wondered how it happened till he made the movie. And we stride right in there on dry land. He not only rolled water up, he dried the bottom. I often wondered if anybody stopped en route and sort of peered through the water to see the fish. Out on the other side, the Egyptians try to follow them. God adds a bit of irony and knocks the wheels off their carts right out there in the middle. Just clunkety clunk. And just when they were well positioned, God turned the water loose. Drowned those sons of guns. Just right there. Now, there's a little distance between where we are and the Promised Land, but there's high probability that a God could work this out and do what I've just seen him do. He can get us there. Wouldn't you say?
Yes, sir.
I'm a believer. I got the confidence. I sit and watch while Miriam and the ladies dance. This trip through the desert ain't going to be as lonely as I thought. Been awful. Still made the trip alone. We're high on the hog. I born you.
No, sir.
Then Moses says, let's go. And Moses brought Israel, chapter 15, verse 22, but you stay where you're at, I'll get there. Brought Israel from the Red Sea. They went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days into the wilderness. Just 3 days. Now, 4 centuries, God has shown he's in control. 4 generations. He just sunk the Egyptians in the sea. He obviously controlled water. Look what he just did. 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. And when they came to Marah, and they couldn't drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. The people murmured against Moses, saying, what should we drink? I'd have said, suck your thumb, you dumb fool, you. Don't ask me. They murmured, what should we drink? He, Moses, cried unto the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, which when he had cast it into the waters were made sweet. There he made for them a statute and an ordinance, and there he proved them. And said, if thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and will do that which is right in his sight, and will give ear to his commandments, I'll put none of these diseases upon you which have brought upon the Egyptians, for I'm the Lord that healeth thee. And in a beautiful type of what Christ would do at Calvary, God's still doing it all to undeserving murmurers. I'm born you. I know where I'm going. These people didn't. And they came to Elim, where were 12 wells of water, and 70 palm trees. And they encamped there by the waters. Woo! Now, wouldn't that make a believer out of you? And they took their journey from Elim And all the congregation of children of Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month, after their departing out of the land of Egypt. Now they were murmuring 3 days out, now they're 15 days into the second month, 2.5 months. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. I'd have killed them. They were lucky. I believe God probably entertained the thought. But he had made a promise to Abraham. And if he killed them all there in the wilderness, that which he told Abram would have had a part, the last part left out, wouldn't it? Or he could have done what he's going to do later. Decide to kill them all over 20 years of age. So he had an option, didn't he? But he didn't get too hard on them right here. They were still beginners, so to speak. Children of Israel said unto Moses, "Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and when we did eat bread to the full. For you have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." I'd have killed them. Then said the Lord unto Moses. Then, he said it, right after they did all that belly aching. "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you." And you know the story. Manna. Manna means, you know, what is this thing? Whatchamacallit? Straight out of heaven. Every morning they found it on the ground to eat. Well, they couldn't get rich overnight with it, you know. He said, you gather it every day. You don't carry anything over till the next day. And the sixth day, you don't gather. Or the sixth day, you gather double, rather. And the seventh day, you don't gather. Keep Sabbath. A bunch of them were afraid that the manna might not fall one day, so they gathered too much and have worms the next day. And the sixth day, they gathered twice as much. That's the only time it wouldn't have worms the next day. Worms were said, "No, no, you take the day off." Now, I think that's pretty significant. God controls history. He controlled Egypt. He controlled the Red Sea, and he controls worms. That means he's in charge of the big and the little things. Don't go out on the Sabbath, but verse 27, 16th chapter says, came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day together. There wasn't anything there. Seventh day. And, you know, even they learned to rest on the Sabbath day after they made a few trips and found nothing on the ground. It wasn't that they were delighted to keep the Sabbath. They just got tired of hunting for the whatchamacallit, and it wasn't there on Saturday. They still weren't very well behaved. And the children of Israel did eat manna. Chapter 17. That's where I told you I was going. And, now by now, what's God done? Just think about it now. He put them in a bunch of situations that looked like it would kill them, and then delivered them. Isn't that right? Did he fail a single time? He got them out of Egypt in spite of Pharaoh's hardened heart. He hardened his heart to help it along. He parted the Red Sea. They're murmuring 3 days later, and he sweetens the water. 2.5 months out, they're murmuring again. Wishing they'd died in Egypt. And he gives them food from heaven. Right? Now, when you put it all together, one, they went down to the land like he said. they were strangers there. Two, they became slaves after being rulers. Three, in exactly the fourth generation, he brings them out with miraculous plagues on the Egyptians. He brings them out richer than when they went in. He parts the Red Sea. He sweetens the water. He rains down manna from heaven. Well, you know, don't you think that when the next problem comes, they'll expect God to deliver them and not let it cave them in? Huh?
Yeah.
I'm warning you.
No, sir.
Wouldn't you? I mean, when God consistently delivers and you get into the next situation that looks like it will destroy, don't you expect God to deliver you? I mean, after a while, he's entitled to that, isn't he? I don't want you to tell me how many of you that have had that happen in your life thought you weren't going to make it, and you did, are facing it again. And you're sure he won't this time. God's run out of deliverance. All the quota used up. Oh, but they had a promise. Well, you know, we got one. I'll never, a lot of them. I'll never leave you nor forsake. Plus back, 2 Corinthians 1:20, all the promises of God, every one of them, in Christ. And I'm in him when I'm faithing. Are yea and amen. Right? How do I catch up to people that just joined us with the frame of reference I just laid down? Can't. Trace the effectual workings of God to fulfill his promise from Abraham to chapter 17 of Exodus, right? God's done the impossible again and again. Right?
Yes, sir.
And at one point in time, since he has to do the deliverance, the very least he can expect is that we eventually expect it. Right? Well, how come every time that doom descends around us, we expect God to miss that one? Every single time I'm at back with a problem, I know I'm going to strike out. Because God ain't going to be there to strengthen me. He did it all before, but he ain't going to do it now. And that links it with everything that went before. The opening word of Exodus 17. And is the conjunction that says it didn't happen in isolation. Now, I teach you God's ways, I don't think. How many of you in this room, when you first started this walk of faith, faced problems bigger than the ones you face now? Had bigger challenge than you do now? You know better. The man that came to town 11 years ago, if God had given the assignment to me 11 years ago I'm facing right now, I'd have said, to hell with me. I ain't going. God's tricky. He delivers you steps at a time until, you know, you get out of one, and then you're deeper in the wilderness. If I'd have known what's coming up now was coming up, I'd have quit 10 years ago. hell. I could handle my past problems the way I am now easy. But here I am, ends deep, I can't get out. And I just fell into a pothole. God didn't know it was there. I mean, I could hold my breath and get to the surface as bad as it looked in the previous spot. But I just fell off in a hole. With a diving machine, I couldn't get to the top. I thought God had trained me so I could watch other people learn how to do what I can now do. And, I mean, you know, the Lord parted the Red Sea, sweetened the water, and gave us bread from heaven. Now I'm ready for anything. And all the congregation of the, Exodus 17. And all the congregation of the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin. Well, that's the way to go. From the wilderness of Sin. I got a house full of them every Sunday. They're doing their best to journey from the wilderness of Sin. And anybody that journeys from the wilderness of Sin deserves some classy treatment from God. All the congregation of the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys according to the commandment of the Lord. Leave sin behind. And pitched in Rephidim. Now that doesn't do too much for us until you understand what Rephidim means. The word Rephidim means place of rest. Hot ziggity. Place of rest. Party time. And no water for the people to drink. Now, what kind of party is that? Right here, flat dab in the middle of the desert, God commands me to march from sin to the place of rest. And no water. W.C. Fields once talked about the worst summer he ever spent in Afghanistan, where all he was to drink was water. This is even worse than Fields' condition. No water. Well, now, God can't handle this. You're getting the point. God led us downtown, place of glory. All we had to do was open the doors, and problems would cease. From the wilderness of sin, through the open door of rest. At least I warned you. Don't you go blaming me. You were cavorting around on July 6th, and I told you it'd get worse. Didn't I?
Yes, sir.
There was no water. Now, why does God do that? Now, some of you think you've got a problem. and put some flesh and blood into this. 3.5 million people sent by God to a place called Place of Rest in the middle of the desert with no water. Now, you may think nothing in your checkbook's bad. No roof over your head's bad. Shut the water off, friend. And see how many days it'll take for you to trade roof, checkbook, or anything else for a drink. I want some flesh and blood on this before we start getting too hard on these people. Mama looks at her kids. Mama, I want a drink. I said that to Dad once. We were driving from Idaho to California. We were driving from... You think my dad just a sweetheart? We were driving from Idaho to California, right out there in the middle of Nevada desert. You ever been in the Nevada desert? Those long stretches up and down, these Australian or Russian roadrunners, those things that haul big cars on top come roaring by. But here we are. Dad's just going down the road. Mom's sort of resting in the back seat, and I'm sitting in the front seat. Nothing but, you know, sagebrush and dirt. And I came up with a real brilliant request. I says, Daddy, I want a drink. You know what he did? He just pulled over and stopped and opened the door and says, go out and get one. And I said, where? He said, right out there. When we settled that little exchange, I never said another word about water till we got to Elko, Nevada. When Dad gets up there to lead the song service next Sunday, will all of you say, Daddy, I want a drink? It's a realistic problem. All these little Jewish kids saying, Mama, I want a drink. They had marched, mind you, through the desert. So happy. We're going to a place of rest. I want to rest. I want to rest. And when we get there, God pulls these damn tricks he does all the time. You don't know how many times I've told God since July 6th he can have his damn Rapidem back. Talk about packaging and false advertisement, and you rip that beautiful thing apart and inside rocks and dirt and dust and no water. Wherefore the people did chide with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said unto them, why chide with me? Wherefore do you tempt the Lord? See, God later is going to say Moses knows God's ways. People just see God's acts. Why do you tempt the Lord? If you put it in the context of what I've said, they should have expected the Lord to provide the water. When, his time, how, his way. But they should have been able to say, it's going to be all right. They should have been able to say, we made it to the promised land and we ain't there yet. But in faith we made it there. So, this dry spot will turn into an opportunity for blessing. They should have had the same song and dance routine they had on the other side of the Red Sea. And the chorus should have been, "Hooray for the opportunity for blessing." Now, you know, I wouldn't have done it either. So I'm not putting you down. But I'm trying to tell you what God's ways are. Somewhere God's entitled to a people saying, looking at God's performance, this place of rest that He promised will be a place of rest, will be a place of rest. They didn't. All of God's past performance is canceled out by one delay or one bad appearing situation. Well, you know, when you march as far as I've marched and your tongue's like cotton and there ain't no water, you don't think clear. Any of you understanding what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Sure as hell hope I do. I really feel sorry for you people. I mean, you know, you want to hear some of this when I teach it. I knew it before I taught it. And I forget. So you really must have problems. Just sat down on a cactus. And the pain in those delicate parts sort of dims your view of God. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
And the people thirsted there. Where? Rephidim. Place of rest. And the people thirsted there. For water. And the people said, "Don't get discouraged, Moses. Get ready for a miracle." And the people thirsted there for water. And the people murmured against Moses and said, "Wherefore is this that thou hast brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst?" And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, "You saddle me with a bunch of killers, God. What shall I do unto this people? They be almost ready to stone me." And the Lord said, "Get out of the way, I'll drop a rock on them." The Lord said unto Moses, "Go on before the people. Take with thee of the elders of Israel and thy rod, wherewith thou smotest the river. Take in thine hand and go. Behold, I will stand before thee there upon the rock in Horeb, and thou shalt smite the rock, and there shall come water out of it, and the people that the people may drink, a flinty rock." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. Now you think about that. That took a little bit of faith on Moses' part. I mean, the need's water. And God says, "Go to a rock and take your rod and hit the rock." That makes throwing a rod down, making it turn into a snake, look like magic tricks by comparison. Now, they want to kill Moses because they want water. So Moses, he stages, according to God tells him what to do, but it doesn't say that God told the people that. It just says he just told Moses. And Moses to go and create a real dramatic scene. "You thirsty? Follow me." And he goes and leads him right to a big old rock. Now, you know, it might have been a rock of great significance. I've taught you that. But still rock. It ain't done no crying yet. Ain't no water seeped out of it yet. It obviously had demonstrated no water powers yet. I mean, it made sense if God said, now take your rod like a witching rod and walk in circles, ever expanding. I'm going to lead you to water. That's not too bad a test, is it? To take your rod and go with, get everybody there. I mean, get the scenario, stage it right. Play out a drama in front of the whole nation. I'm going to open the doors of that place. It's impossible, but we're going to do it. Stand right there in front of that big old rock and hit it. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. And he called the name of the place Massa and Meribah because of the chiding of the children of Israel and because they tempted the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? Now, come on. You know what they said back there when they were hungry? Psalm 78:19 quotes what they said. Can the Lord furnish a table in this wilderness? He did. Every day. Now, they're saying, is the Lord among us or not? Any of you recently said, where in the hell is God? Huh? Any of you said, is God alive or not? I've said it very eloquently. See, when I think he's not there, it doesn't matter what you say because he's not there to hear it anyway. So I really get it all out. Too cold. I'm heating it up in here. I say, you cross-eyed excuse for a God midget-minded little peanut with no power. I got people looking at me to see if I really do say that.
For more of the teaching, please go to the next tape. Thank you.